one-wheel landings, air show stunt, or useful everyday skill. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest, as is the case most Mondays, is Bob Miller, CFI, publisher of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, and proprietor of Bob Miller Flight Training Online. We're talking about safety today, and specifically crosswind landings. We've talked about this a number of times in the past. Today, we're going to get into a specific tactic. And Bob, thanks for taking some time out for our listeners today.
Well, thanks, Paul. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
All right. Now, for years, Bob, when you're landing in a crosswind, there have been two competing schools of thought. One says you come in crabbed and at the last minute straighten it out. And then the other school of thought is you come in holding the center line, but in a bank, and wind up landing on one wheel. For some reason, people seem kind of afraid to land a general aviation aircraft on one wheel at a time. They think of it as some sort of airshow stunt. Tell us what the value is of learning this technique.
Well, landing on the upwind wheel obviously requires that the upwind wing be down. And when that upwind wing is down, that's a mouth tongue twister to say that, it protects against an upset from a gusty wind getting under the wing and literally lifting the airplane up and over onto the downwind wing. The reason that I spend so much time talking about crosswind landings and do a lot of teaching with crosswind landings is data-based. We suffer more accidents, fortunately not all fatal, but more accidents in the landing phase than in any other phase of flight. And of the landing phase accidents, most of them, by a wide margin, are accompanied by crosswinds. In other words, it was a gusty crosswind that upset the landing that created the mishap in the first place. Why is this? And one of the big reasons, I can see just about 6 miles from my home airport, and that's called Buffalo International Airport, where they have a thriving flight school, and two intersecting runways where students, by and large, are offered the most wind-favorable runway, and that's the runway they use. And their students are taught, let's not take on any unnecessary risks or chances, and we'll always land on the most wind-favorable runway. Whereas the vast majority of airports in the United States, certainly, and throughout the world, are only one-runway airports. So crosswinds are more the norm than the unusual. Students who are trained in these single-runway airports typically have better crosswind landing training because oftentimes they don't have the choice of a more wind-favorable runway. So what's the best way to become crosswind proficient? And in the article that I wrote in the March issue of Over the Airwaves, I really talked about getting in there with tailwheel experience. That's a great format to practice this, because if you can master tailwheel aircraft, conventional gear aircraft in crosswinds, then by the time you get to the tricycle gear, it's a whole lot easier all the way around.
Now let's talk for a minute about the difference between those two types of airplanes, because I think more and more tailwheel instruction availability is disappearing. I know that here in the Salt Lake area, I have a friend who's been trying to find it, and there's no place that he's found, in the immediate Salt Lake area where he can get his tailwheel endorsement. And I know back when I was learning to fly about 10 years ago, it was starting to get a little tough to find. Everything we hear from people who talk about theory says that tricycle gear airplanes are better, safer, easier to manage. Why would someone want to seek out tailwheel instruction? And I know the answer, but I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, because the tailwheel requires a very firm, aggressive, and proper use of the rudder. And to maintain runway alignment. Whereas if you can get a tricycle gear, if you can get that nose down on the runway, it's spring-loaded to be aiming straight. And the airplane will likely track straight just with gentle little toe pressures on the rudder pedals. A tailwheel airplane, you're only coming down on two wheels, and you're only going to stay on two wheels, and the third wheel is in the back is of almost no use to you other than to help you steer off the runway and onto the taxiway. You're flying that airplane all the way to a stop, literally on a tailwheel airplane. In fact, you're balancing on those two main gears with a tailwheel airplane. That's not true in a tricycle gear. So to answer your question, if you can develop the skills to master a tailwheel aircraft, it just makes that tricycle gear aircraft that much easier. That's why I like to tell people, if you learn to fly in Buffalo, New York, in and around the Great Lakes, you can typically fly anywhere in the world, because you will not find any worse flying weather than you find in Buffalo and around the Great Lakes. So it's like going to the gym and working out with heavy weights, so that at the end of the workout, you're walking around your office in the middle of the day, you know, carrying a cup of coffee or a file is nothing compared to that 200 pounds you were carrying on your back at the gym. It's just good training technique.
All right, when we come back from the break, I want to talk a little more about tailwheels, Bob, and what makes them a good endorsement to have in your logbook. Bob Miller is my guest. Back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Freedom through control. Cirrus has completely reinvented the personal aircraft and the entire experience of owning a personal aircraft. It's a bold new take on private aviation that we call Cirrus Flying 2.0. You set the schedule. You chart the course. You're in control.
Piperjet.
Pipermatch.
Global expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller, talking about tailwheel airplanes. And Bob, I have to note that for whatever theoretical advantages they have as training aircraft, when I was learning to fly, maybe it's because of my demographic, but to me, flying a small airplane was so much better when it was a tailwheel airplane, just in every sensory input. Why do you suppose they're disappearing? Is it strictly an insurance company deal?
No, I think it's just what the public demands. That's presumably what the manufacturers are doing. You know, we call the nose wheel a training wheel. It's an easier airplane to handle. It's an easier airplane to taxi. And there are less mishaps with them. And I think even commercial airlines, as soon as we graduated from the DC-3, which, of course, was a tailwheel aircraft, to a DC-4, DC-6, and on up the line, from that day forward, all commercial aircraft were set up as tricycle gear airplanes. They're just so much easier to handle, and I have no objection to that. I think anything that we can do to make these aircraft easier to fly, easier to control, has got to be good for the industry. And if we can reduce the accident rate and by creating a tricycle gear, then that's, I think, what we need to do. That doesn't mean that we don't want to go back there and use the tailwheel for training purposes, just like we go up and suitably designed aerobatic aircraft to do unusual maneuvers. If we can master unusual maneuvers in an aerobatic airplane, that makes us that much more proficient in our little Cessna 172, 182 in case we encounter an unusual attitude. So all the way around, it's just good training. But to answer your question why there are fewer of them, I think that's just primarily marketing considerations from the manufacturer.
I recently saw a story where a flight school in Florida actually put a Cub on the flight line. This is a school that specializes in training sport pilots. And they got a Cub for two reasons. One, it's a tailwheel airplane, and they wanted people to be able to develop stick and rudder skills. But the other was that the tailwheel airplanes, if you can still find them, typically will be full of steam gauges, and they wanted people to be a little less dependent on glass panels for setting up landings and that sort of thing. What is the value of a tailwheel endorsement in this day and age? If you were to recommend someone go out and get one, what would be the argument for them to do that?
You know, Paul, you ask very perceptive questions. I ask the same question. What is the value of a multi-engine rating for a GA pilot? Unless you have an aircraft accessible to you that you can use to apply those skills that you learned to obtain the endorsement, then you have to question the wisdom of getting the endorsement in the first place. I know lots of us like to go out and get seaplane ratings. I mean, that's fun. You can get them in a weekend, but to go out and use that seaplane rating 1 year after you had it and had not been in a seaplane ever since, you're asking for trouble. So, you know, any rating, whether it's tailwheel, multi-engine, seaplane rating, aerobatic training, it all works together for the good, I believe, in making us more proficient, more skilled pilots. Any training that we get that stretches the envelope, and certainly a tailwheel endorsement stretches that envelope. It makes us much more skilled in landing takeoff, and it teaches us better aerodynamic skills. For that reason alone, I think it's worth going out and getting. If you can find it, get it. You know, we should all endeavor to increase the ratings and endorsements on our pilot certificates, just as if climbing another mountain is there. I got my ATP certificate when I was 55 years old, and I knew at the time there was no way I was going to be commanding an airliner between the ages of 55 and 60, or even later to 65. But it was a mountain. And the process of studying and preparing for the ATP check ride just increased my skill level. It increased my proficiency, and it made me fly to a higher standard. So I would argue anybody to get any kind of a rating out there, not necessarily to go out there and exercise those privileges unless you're proficient with that rating, but get the rating as an added training benefit.
All right. When I was learning to fly, I was somewhat of a curiosity in the pilot lounge at the airport where the plane was based, because the pilot lounge, you know, if you went there in the morning, was often filled with crusty old guys who'd flown in World War II, and the sight of a much younger guy coming in to take primary training in an Aranka Champ, they'd laugh and they'd say, well, finally, we'll have some new pilot who knows what his feet are for. Is there value in learning rudder skills for someone in a tricycle gear airplane? I don't mean is there value necessarily, but do a lot of people who learn to fly in 172s underuse their rudder or not appreciate what it can do?
Yes. A short answer, yes. And it's explained in the accident data. The stall spin. And that's a stall that is yawed, and the yaw results from an inadequate or inappropriate use of the rudder. If everybody had consummate rudder skills, very few stalled aircraft would wind up in an unintentional spin. And I've seen it firsthand. I mean, we give flight reviews. In fact, we teach guys that are flying Boeing 757s, Boeing 767s. They come out to our airport, they get an Cessna 172, and their feet are sitting flat on the floor. And they're used to yaw dampeners. They the rudder pedals are there as a footrest, not to control the aircraft. And so we get in the Cessna 172s. They're very forgiving for weak rudder use. The only time that becomes really critical is if you get yourself into particularly a power on stall situation. You're trying to get off of a short field, clear an obstacle. You put the airplane into a power on departure stall. And if your feet are not firmly on the rudders, you're going to have a yawed condition at the same time you're stalling, and bingo, there's a stall spin. Is it serious? It happens once a week in the United States, Paul. We have over 50 fatal stall spin accidents in the United States, and they can all be traced back, in 90% of the case. It has to be, by definition, inadequate rudder, inappropriate rudder use, because an airplane that's coordinated and stalled will not spin. Case closed.
Well, let's hope we can still find the Aranka Champs and the J3 Cubs out there when we need them. And Bob, we appreciate your thoughts on this. We'll catch you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
You can sign up to receive Bob Miller's free monthly newsletter and find links to his flight school at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.